Alright, we're on the top of Chofei Amun Aleph by the Mishnah. Mar says, Marchakim et nevelot, vet akvarot, vet aburski minair 50 amma. So these three items, you have to distance from the city for 50 amot. The problem, as Rashi points out, obviously, is mishum reach ra, the bad smell that emanates from such activities or disposal of such items. So therefore, we want to have at least 50 amot away from the city. I think you could even see it similar to the previous Mishnayot, where Rashi also mentioned, or the Gemara mentioned, what Noyei, right, the beauty of the city, that as Rashi tells it, it's Tiferet Eretz Yisrael, that the city should have open space around them, and that obviously if you want open space and the cities to be beautiful, you don't want things like piles of Nevelot, Beit HaKvarot, and Burskis that are immediately around the city. So you must distance them at least 50 amot. Eino sim Burski elo lemizrach. Can only put up a tanning for the orot, right, for the skins on the eastern side of the city. From the eastern side of the city. Rabbi Kiva omer l'chol ruach u'oseh chutz mimarava. Rabbi Kiva says you can do it on any side of the city as long as you don't do it on the western side of the city. U'marchik chamishim ama. But he has to distance it 50 amot. What that modifies in Rabbi Kiva's statement, the Gemara is going to discuss. I mean, does that on the Chol Ruach must be Chamishim Ama, or that's the western side must be Chamishim Ama, and the other sides don't need Chamishim Ama. Okay, Marchakim et Mishra min Hayerek. So this is the part of the Mishnah we quoted earlier in the Gemara, when we dealt with the machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi, that you have to take away the flax soaking beds. You have to move those away from the Yerek, away from gardens or vegetables. Ve'et ha'krishim min ha'btzalim, and leeks away from onions. Ve'et ha'chadel min ha'dvorim, mustard from the bees. Rabbi Yossi matir b'chadel, and Rabbi Yossi's matir b'chadel allows you to, and we saw that before, as the Gemara is going to say, that Rabbi Yossi says, before you complain about, you know, my mustard hurting your bees, what about your bees, right, hurting my mustard? Zibaylu, Rabbi Kiva echi kamar. What is Rabbi Kiva saying in the Mishnah over here? He says, the Chol Ruach Oseh V'Somech, that in any direction he can place it as close as he wants to the city, no problem. Chutz Mimarava D'Marchik Nunama, except for the western side, where he must qualify or he must meet the standards laid out in the Mishnah, which is the 50 Amot, or V'Oseh. Oh, Vilma the Chol Ruach Oseh Marchik Hamishim Amot. Maybe they mean that in the other three directions you're allowed to put it at least 50 Amot away from the city. Chutz mimarava, except for the western side, the enosek klal, that you're not allowed to do it at all on the western side. Why not? Because we're going to see, we'll see in a second, but the ruach maravi, the western wind which comes from that western side, is going to, it's a strong wind, and it's going to bring the smell into the city. So we want to prevent you from using the western side. Tanya, Rabbi Kiva Omer, so Tashma, the Gemara says, I'll explain it. Tanya, we have a brace, Rabbi Kiva Omer, l'chol ruach hu aseh, u'marchik chamishim ama. So there you go, it's clear here that it's any other direction you have to do it. You still have the requirement or the minimum standard of putting it 50 amot away. Chutz mimarava, except for the western side, de'eno sekol ikar, ipnei shehi tidira, that you may not place it on the western side at all or whatsoever, because the western wind, right, is tidira. So you would have thought, or the simple way to understand what tidira means here is that it's constant. That wind is always there, it's constant, and therefore, right, one would not want to place the burski on the western side of the city because that would be a continuous problem for the city. That would be the simple understanding. The Gemara wants to know exactly what this tidira is. So, Amalei Rova, the Rav Nachman, my tidira, what is tidira? Ilei ma tidira biruchot, it's the most common of the winds, or the most frequent of the winds. V'amar Rav Chanan bar Abba Amar Rav, Dalad ruchot min hashvot b'chol yom. There are three winds that blow, four winds that blow each day, meaning from the four directions of the earth. Ruach tzvonit im kulan, and the northerly wind is with all of them. So she'imalei kein eino olam itkayim afilu sha'achat. If it was not for the fact that the northern wind was the one that was continuous or always present, the world would be destroyed. So here you see what's the most common wind or most frequent wind? That is the northern wind. So how could you suggest that Tidira would be the western, right, the western wind? Right? Even though, right, today we know because of the rotation, right, the rotation or the revolutions of the earth, that is the case. The western wind is the one. For instance, when you fly east versus west, right? You have a difference in your timing because of the western winds that help you in one direction and not in the other. But here, the Gemara wants to know, based on this statement of Rav Chanan bar Abba, what are you going to do with this fact that it's not the most tadir because you have the northern winds? So where it says, Ruach Jomit Kashem Mekulan, and the worst of all those winds, or the harshest of all those winds, is the southern wind. V'yimalei ben Neitz Shema'amida. If it wasn't for the fact that Ben Neitz, we'll see in a second from the Pazu, but Ben Neitz is a shade, or some sort of sar of the Ruach, that if it wasn't for the fact that he put up his wings to somewhat dampen the strength of the southern wind, Machrevet Odolam, it would destroy the world. Shinemar, because it says in Iyov, this is in Hashem's critique or Musar when he gives to Iyov, after Iyov says, you know, maybe he got mixed up about Iyov and Oyev, and Hashem's term comes with a list of items that Hashem does that are unique and particular in the world, so amazing, you think, how could you think that I got mixed up between Iyov and Oyev when right here I take care of all these things? Ha, mi binatcha yaver. Is it your wisdom? I mean, Hashem is saying to Iyov, is it your wisdom, the Aver Neitz, that causes the Neitz, the hawk, to hover? Yifros kinafav leteiman, that spreads his wings out to the southern side. So now the Gemara is going to play on that. What does it mean, Yifros kinafav leteiman, that he puts up his wings to the southern side? It means that he holds up the wind. I mean, that not like we would have thought hovering and flying of the hawk, but rather that the hawk is the one who's actually preventing the southern wind from coming. Selamaita dira. What does tidira mean? Tidira bi shchina. It's the most common, or is the place where the shchina is. So what does that mean? Da amre b'shu ben Levi. Bo v'nachzik tova l'avoteinu. Sheodienu makom tfila. Let us give thanks to our forefathers. Means the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, right? That wrote down in Sefer Ezra. But here, as Rashi quotes in Sefer Ezra, but Ezra in Rashi is usually Ezra and Nehemiah. He sees them as one sefer. So in Nehemiah we find the pasuk tichtiv utzvas. We say this every morning. We said it this morning. Utzvas shemaim lechamish tachavim, that the constellations or the heavenly bodies all bow down to a kodesh baruch hu. And where are the heavenly bodies found? Right, the heavenly bodies which are right. The sun rises in the east. So the heavenly bodies that are found in the east are bowing down to a kodesh baruch hu, or to the shechina which is found in the west. So what does it mean that the Marava? Marava is the place where the Shechina is found. So based on this, the reason that Rabbi Akiva restricts the western side is not necessarily because the wind, the western wind, which is frequent or common, but rather that's where the Shechina is present. And it would be inappropriate, right, almost an affront to the Shechina to have a smelly burski on the western side where people are going to be turning to daven. Now, we'll see in a second, but Tosus points this out, that the deot over here are clearly not like the Gemara in Brachot. We know clearly from the Gemara in Brachot, when it comes to davening, where do you daven? You daven towards Yerushalayim. You daven towards Eretz Yisrael. You daven to, well, if you're in the western side of Eretz Yisrael, you daven to the east. If you're on the eastern side of Eretz Yisrael, you daven to the west, north to the south, south to the north. But you daven towards Eretz Yisrael. You daven towards Yerushalayim in Eretz Yisrael. In Yerushalayim, you daven towards Harabait. Harabait, you daven towards the Eichal. And the Eichal, you daven towards the Aron HaKodesh. So the Gemara in Brachot lays out that over here, the Gemara seems to indicate, and we're going to see this in a number of opinions here, that that's not the case. And that's what Tosafot says, that they argue. These Amorim do not agree that you daven towards Yerushalayim, but they seem to indicate that you daven, well, here, towards the western side, which we're going to see in a second. Skamat giflo Rav Acha bar Yaakov, v'dumak eben shnotel prasmi rabo, v'chuzer l'acharavu mishtachaveh. He says, how do you know from that pasuk that it's really true that the Shechina is in the western side? Why? Because our assumption is that they're bowing down to, right, they're on the eastern side because the sun rises on the east side. That's where everything is visible on the eastern side. And therefore, when they bow down, they're bowing to Hashem or the Shechina, which is found on the western side. He says, how do you know that? Yes, true, that normal and the proper etiquette when you bow down to a king is that you're far away and you bow down to the king from afar. But what happens if the king gives you a gift or the king hands you something? When the king gives you a gift or something, you go to the king himself. You take the gift and you bend down, you bow down, you prostrate yourself and you back away slowly. Like, you know, when you walk out of a shul or a holy place, you turn backwards and you move back. So maybe when we're talking about here, the Tzvash Maimi, the Chamish Tachavim, is that they're right near the Shechina. and the Shekhinah is on the eastern side, they're bowing down to Hashem and then they're backing away, right? They move towards the west, like the sun moves towards the west, they're backing away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu at that point in time. And that would indicate that where the Shekhinah is. The Shekhinah then is on the eastern side, not on the western side. So where says Kashu? Right, that is a good question. That makes the proof less compelling here. So now Rabbi Oshia Savar Shekhinah B'chol Makom. Rabbi Oshia says, no, the Shekhinah is everywhere. Dam Rabbi Oshia, my dichtiv. What does it say in the Pasuk? Atahu Hashem Levadecha, Atasita Teshemaim, Shmei Shemaim. And again, from Nehemiah, what we say every day. So it says, Shluchacha lo kishluchei basar v'dam. Your emissaries, your messengers of Kadosh Baruch Hu are not like human messengers. Shluchei basar v'dam mimakom shemishtalchim l'sham machzirim shlichutam. If you want to know, if you send out a king, sends out a messenger, how does he know that the messenger has completed his mission? How do we know that his emissary has done what he's asked? He must return back to the king himself and tell him that he completed the mission. To the place that they are sent, that from there they indicate or they're able to say that they have completed their mission. Shenemar, because it says by, again, Iyov, Hatishlach brakim ve'yelchu, v'yomru lecha hinenu. So there it says, hinenu yavo. So it says, when I send out my bolts of lightning, and they go, and they say, here we are, come. Right? Vayomru lo nemar, ela va, I'm sorry, yavo, I thank you. Yes, vayomru lecha yinenu, he says we are here. So Gemara says, yavo vayomru lo nemar, it doesn't say that they, okay, right, you came or you come, and they'll tell you, ela vayochu, they went vayomru, and they said, meaning that they never have to return. Where they went, where the lightning bolts went, from there they say, we are here, we did it, we did what you asked. The only way that can be true is if the Shekhinah is everywhere. If the Shekhinah is everywhere, then where they left from and where they go to is irrelevant because Hashem is in both places. If Hashem is in both places, then they can always return their shlichut wherever they end up. So now we're going to have a list of opinions who agree with this position of Rabbi Oshia that the Shekhinah is everywhere. Because Rabbi Shmuel says Shekhinah b'chol makom, the Tana Rabbi Shmuel, minayin she'Shekhinah b'chol makom. How do we know that the Shekhinah is everywhere? Shenemar, it says in the Pasuk in Zechariah, v'hine, ha'malach hadover bi'yotze, the malach that it was speaking to me was going out, u'malach acher yotze likrato. So it says, another malach came after him, you'd say, likrato, goes out to greet him. So it doesn't say, acharav, right, lo ne'amar. It doesn't say, after him, it doesn't say, ela likrato, that he came to greet him. That Shekhinah is everywhere. Because had it been that the Shekhinah was in a singular position or a single direction, then after the malach that came to Zechariah left, and then there's another malach that's being sent out, it should be acharav, that he's going after the first malach that left. But rather, here it says that the new malach, or the second malach who was sent, was coming to greet the first malach. If that's the case, it means that he's coming from another direction, and it's still called, what? Likrato, that he's coming to greet him. So even though they're coming from different directions, the malachim who are sent by Hashem, who are sent by the Shekhinah, nevertheless, right, it's always called Likrato. It's called to greet him. Right now, Vav Rav Sheshet Tzavar Shekhinah B'chol Makom. And also Rav Sheshet has that same opinion that the Shekhinah is everywhere. Damarle Rav Sheshet L'sham Ay L'chol Ruchta Ukman L'var Mizrach. Rav Sheshet, who we know from other places in Shas, was a Saginahor, that he was... Right, blind. So he would say to his servant who was taking care of him, stand me up in any direction, the varmin mizrach. You can place me to face any direction to daven except towards the east. The la mishum delay be shekhinah. Don't think the reason I'm telling you not to daven or put me to daven towards the east is because there is no shekhinah in the east. La mishum demore ba mine. But rather because the minim daven in that direction, which means they daven eastward, which is true of the pagan right, religions, as well as, I don't know if there was an emendation here in the Gemara also, but the obviously the Christian religion also faces towards the east. Their churches face towards the apses or towards the eastern side. And I have no mine over here references to the right, Nutzrim as well. So the idea of not facing east was to separate or differentiate between right, him and other religions or other peoples who davened to the eastern side. And therefore he said, I would daven anywhere because the Shekhinah is found anywhere. Now, Rabbi Bo was of the opinion, Amar Shekhinah b'marav. right, that the Shekhinah is on the western side or towards the western side. This goes back to or similar to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. We said before that it's the place to daven or direction to daven is to the west. The Amar Rabbi Bo, Rabbi says, "My Uriah." Why is the word Uriah used? Now Rashi brings two interpretations of what the word Uriah means. One possibility is that the Persian word for west is Uriah. Right, so why is that called in Lashon Parsi? Why is the direction called the Uriah? Now, Rashi rejects that pshat and says that I think that the reason it's Uriah, Uriah is actually the eastern side, not in the west, but rather in the eastern side. So if you say it's in the west, then the Gemara is saying, what does it mean? My Uriah, Avirka, the place of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the presence of Hashem. So if you say in Persian, Uriah means west, then why is it called Uriah? Because it's a conjugation of the word Avirka, which means the place where Hashem is. Rashi says he thinks the word Uriah means east, right? That it means the eastern side, and it means Avirka. What does it mean Avirka? Because when you stand in the east, it faces the place, right, towards Avirka. When you're in the east and you face the western side, that is the open space, that is the area when you're looking out to the area where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Tosa says that the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rach think that the first pshat, that it's the western side, is right. But either way, he's using the word Uriah to explain why, or how do we know that that's where the Shekhinah is in the west. Right now, based on that, I just point you out to the Tosfot that says that we go to Chol Ruchta Ukman, that we, if you look at the Tosfot, Chol Ruchta Ukman, Koli Hani Amurai, Leit Luhad Detanyi Brachot. All these Amuraim don't hold the Braisa in Brachot. Shechayev Adam Litbalel Neged Yerushalayim, that everybody has to face Yerushalayim. Why are they talking about you can face any direction, you can face towards the west? Why is that relevant? Face towards Yerushalayim, just depends where you are. They hold like Rabbi Shmuel that the Shekhinah is in any place, right? And those that hold that the Shekhinah is on the western side, Rabbi Akiva, they hold like Rabbi Akiva, Damar Bipnei Shehi Tidira, because that is Tadir. So we have these different Amoraim here. Some Amoraim say it's Bechol Ruach, right? And some those say that it's in the west. So those that say that it is B'chol Makom, they're going to hold like Rabbi Yishmael. And those that say that it's going to be on the western side say that it's like, or hold like Rabbi Akiva, who say that that's what Tadira means. B'chanina, D'shmaitin, Damar, Kagon, Atun, D'yatfun, L'tzvona, D'Arad Yisrael. Later on, we're going to see Rabbi Chanina says that we who live in the north of Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, Adrima, we should be down in south, Sever like a bright to the Brachos. He's the one who holds like the Brais and Brachos. So we're going to get that in the Gemara. So you have three sets of opinions about where one should daven here. Either any direction, because the Shekhinah is anywhere, you can daven anywhere. Another opinion that you can daven to, you daven to the west, because the Shekhinah is in the Ma'arav. And the last possibility is that you daven towards Eretz Yisrael, like the Braisa in Brachol, which is what we hold like, and that we're going to get to later in our sugya. The two other interesting points is, why is the Gemara in search of where the Shekhinah is? I mean that there, why don't we have the obvious answer? What's the obvious answer? Why we should know that the Shekhinah is B'Ma'arav? Right, the Shekhinah is in the Ma'arav because what about the Mishkan? What about the Mikdash? Where is the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodeshim? Where's the Aron found? Inside of the Binyan HaMishkan or Inyan of the Binyan HaMikdash. It's on the western side of those right structures. It's on the western side of the structures. That would be the best proof that the Shekhinah is B'Ma'arav. So why doesn't the Gemara bring that as a proof? Right, so the two answers that Tosfos gives, one answer is that it has to be in one direction, meaning by definition it's a building. So you want to bring a proof from a Mishkan or a Mikdash because it has to be placed. The Aron has to be somewhere within the building. So just because it's on the western side is not necessarily indicative that that is where the Shekhinah is because it has to be somewhere. Now the Ritzbah says no, that the answer actually is that even in the Kodesh HaKodashim, the Aron or the Heichal is pushed towards the eastern side of the Kodesh HaKodashim. So if that's the case, right, then maybe there's no indication from that. Just because it's on the western side but it's pushed towards the east, so you have no raya from that indication. Because that would have been the simplest answer for the Gemara. The fact that the Gemara totally ignores Mikdash and Mishkan over here sounds like it sounds like that is not the issue. That's not the proof cannot be brought from there. The last thing that's interesting is why don't we say that if the reason we said that the Tzva Shamayim, that the constellations bow down to Hashem is because they come up in the east. But why don't we say at the end of the day they're in the west or at night? They're on the western side. So say they're bowing down to Hashem from the western side, which indicate that Hashem is in the east. So Tosafot says something that's interesting, but I think it's interesting because it does have halachic implications also, which is he says that we only do what we can see. We only determine by what we can see. We see the constellations on the eastern side because that's where they rise. When they set on the other side, we don't see that. So we can't, right, we can't talk about that, that Sfashwam Khamishakam, even if it's true, we don't see it, and therefore it's not definitive, and we don't define it. And that's true in Allah also. We have ideas like that, that we, what you can see, right, it's what to the visible eye, right, so certain things like by Shabbos, or items like briyot, that are inside of water, and things like that. If you can't see them, we don't classify them as briyot that you can't eat, borer. If you can't see the item to be distinguished, then it's not necessarily classified as borer. So there are items in Allah where it's that when you, what you can see defines, right, what the Allah is, and Tosfos has a similar concept here. Not, I mean, it's an agadic concept, but that we only determine something by b'chol ro'in, what we can see or what's visible to us. Amar Rav Yehuda, my dichtiv. So of course, I have to be, Daf Yomi, there's no coincidences, but Parshat HaShavua, right, it says, Yarof kamatar lichhi, right, that it will drip like the rain, my teachings, zu ruach maravit. This is the western wind, Shiba mi'arfo shalolam, that comes from the back of the world, the back of the neck. Right, tizal katali mati, it flows like the, my words flow like the dew. Zu ruach tzvonit, this is the northern wind. Shemazelet et hazahav, that it, Rashi says mechamemet, that it warms up, or the zahav. I don't know if that's necessarily the play here, or if it softens the gold. And it says, because the proof text from Yishayahu is hazalim zahav mikis, those that pour gold from their purse, from their wallet. So over there, zalim or zal is to pour or to be liquid. So I don't know if it's talking about, Rashi says mazelet means to heat it up, to soften the gold, or mazelet over here means zal, to make it cheap, right? There's zol, meaning that ruin it somehow. But all right, now the next. Right. Cheapens, right? Which but I assume that's because it's softening the zahav, right? That it causes it to be cheapened. He ruins the zahav. Tzvi mentioned also, which is that Rashi says that when the world gets warm and there's shrav and ravon, then the zahav becomes cheap. There's deflation. So that's what Rashi's after. But I assume the play on the word here, zol, zal, all of them are from the same type of etymology. Right now, kisirim ali deshe. Right, like stormy winds, the grasses arise. Zuruach mizrachit. This is the eastern wind. Shemesaret et kol olam kitzeir. That it makes stormy the world like a shade. Kerivim ale esef. Right, like the rains come up the grass. Zuruach dromit. This is the southern wind. Shehi ma'ala rivivin megadelet asavim. That brings up, right, brings the rains and the helps the crops grow. All right, so this is somewhat different than what we saw above in terms of the directions or the winds that are coming up. Tanya Rabbi Elazar Omer, Olam l'achsadra hu domeh. Right, that the world is like an achsadra. Now Rashi over here defines an achsadra as she'en l'dofen revi'it. It has three walls and not a fourth wall. If you remember back on the Gemara, we had this on Yud Aleph Amud Bet. There was actually a machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos, and some of the, and the Rebbeinu Gershom, what exactly the achsadra looked like over there. And Rashi over there said an achsadra had no walls on it. Whereas over here he says it has three walls to it. And which is one of the reasons Tosfos raises that Rashi himself seems to say later on that achsadra is a three-walled item. So it's three walls and one side is open. Ruach tzvonit, eno misovevet. Right, so the northern side is not enclosed. Kevin shegia chama, itzel keren maravit tzvonit. When the sun raises the northwestern corner, nichfefet, it folds up, ve'ola lamala, goes above, min arakia, above the firmament. Right, Rabbi Yeshua Omer, olam lukubahu dome. That the world is like a, I would say a cube, but it's more like a, right, like a pyramid of sorts. It's surrounded on all sides. It's blocked on all sides. Beruach tzvonit misovevet, and it goes around the northern side. Vekeven shechama, I mean, that's also enclosed on the northern side. Vekeven shechama magad lekeren marvit tzvonit, and once the sun reaches the northwestern corner, makefet vechozeret achrei kippah, penetrates through the kippah and goes over the top. Shneimar. So bringing the pasuk, then I'll give a little more explanation of this. Oleich el darom, it goes from the south, a sovev el tzafon, and goes around on the north. Oleich el darom bayom, it goes on the southern side during the day. Sovev el tzafon balayla, and it goes on the northern side at night. Sovev, oleich haruach, around goes the ruach. Val svivotav shavaruach. Elu pnei mizrach, upnei marav. These are the east and western sides. Sometimes it goes around them, and sometimes it goes through them. Right now, just to understand basically what they're, in terms of their understanding of the what they were speaking about, from this comes the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, which I'll explain in a second. The famous opinion of Rabbeinu Tam comes from this understanding of the constellations, which is astronomy. Thank you very much. Thank you. Astronomy is, from there comes Rabbeinu Tam's opinion. And now, what they believed, and some of it is we can see today, which is true, although it's not exactly true for what their reasons they say. We are in the northern hemisphere, right? So the sun is always south of us because we are in the northern hemisphere. But that changes. How far south of us that the sun is depends on what time of year, right, we are in, because the rotation of the earth brings us either closer or further away from the, right, as the earth rotates, it brings us closer or further away from the equator to where the sun is. Now, based on that, at different points in the year, the sun will always rise from the, right, what we call this, it goes from the north, from the eastern side. We know the sun always rises in the east and sets in the south, in the west. When it rises in the east and sets in the west, it's always from the more northern side. As the sun moves through the day, it moves what looks to be more and more south, and then comes back down towards the northern side. And again, that's a function of us being in the northern hemisphere. And then, depending on the time of year, which is in the winter time, it will look like it's going less and less south, whereas in the summertime, it'll look like it's going much further south and coming back. So their basic understanding of the sun's movement is that it comes out on the northeastern side. It goes up. Now, they would have thought it almost like on a, we think it goes on and moves on like a, an angle of sorts, but they're, I'm saying it would go travel the, right, the eastern side up to the south and then return from the south, right, down to the northern side on the western side. So at night, what does the sun have to do in order to complete, right, its circling of the earth? But they don't think circles, which we'll see in a second. It has to do, or it has to go along the northern side to return so it can start again on the morning. Right? So according to, in the summertime, for instance, according to them, it's traveled the entire east, south, west. So only thing left for it to do at night is the northern side, which would be a small amount of travel, and that's why the nights are short during the summer. As opposed to in the wintertime, where it started out already very far south, and when it rose in the eastern side, it did very little of the, right, the eastern side. It went up to the south, came back down to the western side. It still has to complete, have to do a sivuv. It has to do all of the western side, the north, and part of the eastern side to rise again in the mornings. That's why the nights during the winter are much longer. And that's what the Gemara just said, that sometimes the west and the east, sometimes it's holech. Holech means during the daytime, that the sun travels the eastern and western sides of the earth. And sometimes it's sovev. Sometimes sovev means that when it's returning to its starting point. You know, when it's returning to its starting point, sovev means that it's not visible. So during the summer, it's holech, that the sun is inside of the kippah and inside of the rakia, and therefore we see it on the eastern and western sides. It's traveling the eastern and western sides. During the winter, it doesn't do so much travel on the eastern and western sides, so therefore it's sovev. It returns on the eastern and western side, and that's why the nights are so long, because it's outside the kippah, inside the rakia. Now, the second issue which is faced is that we know, I'm just going to explain it in our terms, but that we know that the earth rotates, and therefore it's the sun, right? We are rotating around the sun, and we're both rotating and revolving around the sun, and that's what does this, right? Just from a perspective of standing here, we know that it looks like the sun is going around us, right? So for our perspective, let's say that. So we know that the sun, or at least in our idea, the sun would go around us and come back up on the other side. In their view, the earth was not necessarily round, and the sun, in order to do this, or to return to its starting point, did not go around the underneath of the earth, but rather climbed over the firmament and came back, Right? So meaning that either has to somehow return to its starting point. How does the sun return to its starting point? Right? So again, for us, it goes under the earth and pops up on the other side in the morning. For them, it went through the, either according to Rabbi Lezer, who says that there was no fourth wall. What does that mean there's no fourth wall? There's an opening which the sun can go through and then return to its starting point. According to Rabbi Yeshua, it says there's four walls. How does the sun get out of here? He says there are chalonot. There are windows in the kippah that allow the sun to penetrate through, then come back over and return in the morning. But both of them believe that it goes outside of the rakia, outside the kippah, and returns over and then comes back. And that fits in with what I was just explaining to you. From that comes Rabbeinu Tam's position. Rabbeinu Tam says there are two shkiot. Why is there two times that the sun sets? Because when the sun sets, the sun first has to leaves are what we see, what we call the horizon. Right? The sun leaves the horizon. According to what the Gemara, the understanding of the Gemara, what does it mean the sun leaves the horizon? That means that it goes through the kippah, or it goes behind the rakia, meaning that it leaves the horizon. But then, there's a secondary sunset, which is that once it reaches the other side of the rakia, or the other side of the kippah, then it becomes completely dark. There's a second shkia. There's one shkia where the sun goes into the kippah, or into the chalon, and then it travels through the chalon until it reaches the other side. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, that's where you get the two shkiot. There's a first shkia, which is what we know, sunset, that we know as, but that's the first sunset according to the Rabbeinu Tam. And then according to him, there's a secondary sunset, which is after, right, which is after the sun has gone all the way through the kippah, and now is leaving the other side of the kippah, or the rakia. That's the second sunset, and that's where the Rabbeinu Tam comes up with his famous shita of 72 minutes. Because his second shkia is what he classifies as real sunset. And then he has the Tzeis HaKochavim being a short time after that. But based on that, Rabbeinu Tam thinks that the sun doesn't set till much later. But it's based on this understanding over here. Now, the Gemara brought it over here. We're going to see in a second to understand. So the Gemara says, now...
where is Rabbeinu Tam being his
whole thing? It's in Pesachim, in the ninth parak, in the end of the ninth parak in the Pesachim. He talks about it there. He's trying to reconcile the difference between the Gemara in Pesachim and the Gemara in Shabbos that describes the amount of time that's been a Shmashot. And over there he discusses the case. All right, now, Hu Hayomer, Atan Rabbi Lezer. So he says that the fact that we say that it goes around the east or western side, that goes like Rabbi Elazar, who says that there's an opening over there. If there's an opening over there, then it can travel the eastern and western sides because it can go out of the northern sides, as opposed to Rabbi Yeshua thinks it has to penetrate the kippah and come over the top. Right, so now, Mina Chider Tavo Sufa, from the room or the chamber will come the storm or the tempest. Zu Ruach Dromit, this is the southern wind. Umimizarim Kara, and right from the constellations will come cold. Zu ruach tzvonit. This is the northern wind. Mi shmat akel yitain karach. Right from the breath of Kadosh Baruch Hu, there will be ice. Zu ruach marvit. That is the western right wind. Ve'chav mayim b'mutzak. Right, and the expanse of water will made solid. Zu ruach mizrachit. This is the eastern wind. So now we have a number of these winds again that are described here. But now Mar says, "Vamamar ruach dromit male rivivin u'magadelat asavim." Didn't we just say before that the southern wind, right, is the good wind that brings the rains and the crops? So over here, all of a sudden, we said, "What is the one that brings the rains and the crops?" We said that is the mizrachit, the eastern wind. So if it's the eastern wind that's bringing the rains, right, then what is the that brings all the waters? Then why we say before that it's the southern wind that brings the waters? It says Lokasha, Adati Mitra ben Ichuta, Adati Bishifichuta. Depends what type of rain you're talking about. Meaning that if it comes gently, the rain, and it's good rain for the crops, then it comes from the southern side. When it comes in vast quantities and in floodings, then it comes from the eastern side. And that's why it's described as Mayim Bimutzak. Right? It's like a solid rain. Solid rain means like large quantities of rain coming down. That comes from the eastern side. And then about small quantities or normal quantities of rain, that comes from the southern side. Right now, Amar Rav Chista, Mai Dichtiv Mitzafon Zahav Ye'ete, right, that the golden sun or sunshine will come from the north. Zu Ruach Tzvonit Shemazelet Et Zahav. That's what we saw earlier. This is the northern side, which causes the gold to become cheap or to be melted. which is what we quoted from Yishayahu before. So that's talking about the northern. That's what means the north. From the north comes the golden, the sun. I mean, that's the place from which Zahab is ruined when the wind comes from the northern side. Amar Raf Raf Am Baparam Chista Miyom Shcharab Beit Mikdash Lo Hug Shema Ruach Dromit. From the time that the Beit Mikdash was destroyed, then the southern wind has not been called to duty, or hasn't been in its full force. Which is what we said before: the southern wind is the positive wind that brings the rains and the crops. Shneimar Vayigzor Ayamin V'Ra'ev. Shem decreed or stretched out his right arm V'Ra'ev, and there was famine. V'Yochal Al Smol V'Lo Saveu, and they eat from that which comes from the north, and they are not satisfied. Uchtiv, and also said Safon V'Yamin Ataviratam. North and Yamin, which would be south, you created them. So you see from here that Hashem was Gozer al Yamin. What does it mean, Gozer al Yamin? Was Gozer on the south? And there's famine. What does it mean, was Gozer on the south? He prevented the southern wind from coming, and that's why there was famine. Now, just to understand this, we know in the Torah, what is Kedem in the Torah? Kedem in the Torah is east. Achor is, right, west. And that's what we just said before. Yarovka, right, Yarovka Matar Lichi. What was Yarov? Orif was from the western side, the back. Achor was where it came from when we talk about Yarovka Matar Lichi. That was the western wind. Now, if you are facing east, meaning that if you're facing east, then what would be right and left for you? I mean, for instance, imagine in your mind you are facing Jordan right now, or the Jordan River, right? Which way is right? Right would be to the south, which is Yamin, or where Yemen is. Right, Yemen is probably named for that. Yamina would be south, and Smol would be north. Right, would be northways. So that's what the Gemara is suggesting over here. And we're going to see, even up until the time of Rashi, through the time of the Rishonim, all maps had the top of the maps faced east, not north like we have today, where the top of the maps are north, but all maps, the top of the maps were east. Top of the map is east, and right is always south, and left is, right, going to be north. And that's what the Pasuk says. Tzafon v'yamin ataviratam. You north and right, you made them. What does it mean, right? Right means south. Tzafon being left, and Yamin meaning south. And as the Gemara says, that Hashem was Gozer al Yamin on the south, and that prevented, or that caused Ra'ev, because he prevented the northern wind from, the southern wind from coming. Yamin meaning south, and prevented the southern wind from coming. That caused famine. Right, that from the time that the Beit Hamikdash was destroyed, the Geshemim don't come from the great storehouse. Shenemar, Yiftach Lecha Hashem et Yishav Lecha Hashem. Iftach Hashem lecha et otzara tov. That's what we say. People say vayiten lecha. Right, say this. Hashem should open up His bountiful, right, treasure storehouses. So that comes in the same context. The latet matara tzecha. That the continuation of the pasuk is to bring rain. So to bring rain, you need the rain in order to have otzara tov. And the rain's not coming because of the previous statement of Rafa Rambar Papa. Bizman Yisrael osim shirotzenel shomakom, b'Yisrael shuim alad matam. When Bnei Yisrael do what they're supposed to do, and they live in Eretz Yisrael, gishamim yordim miotzer atov. Then the rains come down from the great treasure house or storehouse of Shemayim. Bizman she'en Yisrael shuim alad matam, in gishamim yordim miotzer atov. When Bnei Yisrael don't live on their land, then the gishamim don't come miotzer atov. Which is interesting that the two sides of the statement here is that when they do what Hashem wants and they live in their land, then it comes from Otzer HaTov. Then the only the negative statement is when they're not living in their land, then the Geshemim don't come. Right? They don't say that when Bnei Yisrael don't do the will of Hashem and they're not living on the land. Mar takes it as a given that if they're not Shruim Alad Matam, that means that they're not doing the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the two are connected. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. So now it's a very famous statement. It's quoted, often quoted, and has halachic implications. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, HaRotzeh Sheyachkim Yadrim. One who wants to get smart should go south or face south. Vishi Atzir, one who wants to get rich or wealthy, Yatzpin, should go to the north. V'simanech, and the siman, to help you remember this, Shulchan B'tzafon, the Shulchan, which says the Lechem Apanim, which represents Parnasa, is on the northern side of the Mikdash or the Mishkan, inside of the Kodesh. Right? It's found on the northern side. U'menorah B'darom, and the menorah, which is near mitzvah, the Torah Or, that represents Torah and Chochmah, that's found on the southern side of the Kodesh. So that It's indicative or tells us about what that one should do. Our Gemara over here makes the statement that a person shiachkim yadrim yashir yatspin. The Gemara Brachos quotes it in the context of one's bed, how one should lay out their bed, north to south, south to north. Right there, the Gemara, and there's a very, very, very nice Talmid, Rabbeinu Yona, there that explains what the Gemara is doing. All right, so in Brachot, if you want to look it up, Rabbi Shimon Levi Omer, the olam yadrim, the person should always choose to go south. Shmitoch she mitchakim mitashir. That you may as well get the smarts, because if you get smarts, you also get, if you get knowledge, wisdom, you also get rich in the same time. Shnemar, orech emim bimina, b'smolo, shiva kavod. By Torah, it says that orech emim bimina, right, in the right side, right, is wisdom or great length of life. B'smolo, osher kavod. On the left side, you get osher kavod. So Torah, which is chachma, right, and or, with it also comes osher kavod. So therefore, you see that chachma, right, is maybe a prerequisite, or maybe is a Osher is a pole, you'd say, from Chochmah, and therefore better to take the Yadrim than the Yatzpin. Rabbi Shu ben Levi, didn't we see Rabbi Shu ben Levi earlier? Amar Shechina b'Maraf? That the Shechina is on the western side. Wait, if the Shechina is on the western side, then why would you be davening or facing the south or the north? Wouldn't you be facing the right west? Demitzadeid atzudeid. He turns his face, or he turns himself somewhat. It's unclear here from the Gemara, and then also the Halacha, that what is he doing here? What is the solution to the problem? Right, he's supposed to face west, because that's where he's davening. Now he's supposed to face south, because he wants to have chokhmah. So how does he deal with facing south and facing west? So either the one possibility is that you go on an angle, and you face, right, southwest, which would solve your problem. The other possibility is that you face south, your body faces south, but you turn your head to the west. Or you face west, and you turn your head to the south. Those are the three possible solutions to the problem, and all of them are found. Like, for instance, Rashi, if you look. Rashi says, Ma'at letzad darom, a little bit to the north-south. Adrimo sheponim letzad Yerushalayim. You should turn your heads towards Yerushalayim. So Rashi seems to indicate that, what? That you face, right, west. But then you turn yourself a little bit towards Yerushalayim. Amar lei Rabbi Chanina the Rav Ashi, go natun the Yadbuna b'Tzimfona the Eretz Yisrael. We who live in Bavel, it's north of Eretz Yisrael. Adrimo, we should face south. So Adrimo. So minolon the Bavel Tzimfona. How do you know that Bavel is in the north? The Eretz Yisrael. Kaima dechtiv. It says in Yirmiyahu mitzafon tipatach hara al kol yeshvei aretz. The Bavel, who's going to come and conquer and destroy the first Mikdash, they're going to come from the north. So it must be that Bavel is in the north, and therefore you must find or must. Turn a little bit to the south. So what Rashi indicates is that you're really facing west, and then you turn your face towards the south to face Yerushalayim. So what is the answer? What is it, the halacha? So it's quoted here, the halacha, what one should do. In these instances, the Ramah brings it down, and Ramah quotes it in Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Zadi Dalet, and Siman Zadi Dalet in Siv Bet. Here's the Ramah says, Haga, Vanu Shemachzirinu Panenu L'Mizrach, right, we faced east, because we sit on the, where do we sit? We're on the western side of Eretz Yisrael. He's talking about right in Europe. And therefore we're facing Eretz Yisrael. Shouldn't put the aron exactly on the eastern side where the sun arises, because we just saw that before, right? Because, right? That is the way of those that are have been off the path. Rak mikavnim neged emtsa hayom. What to do with the middle? Umishu rotzeh lekayem amram. Who wants to keep the words of a chazal? Rotzeh la'ashir yatzpin. Olechakim yadrim. Who wants to go face north to be rich or face south to be wise? Mikomakom yitzaded panav lemizrach. He should face south or north, but turn his head towards the east. So your body would face, right, the north or south, and your face would go towards the west. Now, the Mishnah Berurah quotes right away, Rizvah talks about this, when he says, Ruach Mishar Ruchot, Kugon Shurotze Lachkim Lashir, Vamru Chazal, Rotze Lachkim Yadrim, Lashir Yatzpin. Okon Shurochev Al Chamor, he's riding on a donkey, Viev Shadol Lachzir. At that small, he can't turn his body, the Tzad Eretz Yom, Yichom Makom, Yitzid Panav, Akayim Mishnah Amar, to keep the word of Ma Itvalel Alecha, Derech Hatzam, that you will daven, that's the price in Brachot. Vanu Shemachzirim, so he says, talks about us, what we do over here. Just quote him. Okay, Yitzadid Panav. Rashi Perish Ipcha. Rashi explained the exact opposite in the Gemara. Rashi says, Shamod Lemizrach, you should face east. And turn your head a little bit to the north or south. So Rashi says you should face Eretz Yisrael and move your head to the right north or south to accomplish the Mamrei Chazal. The Ramah says no, you should face north or south and turn your head to the east to accomplish facing Eretz Yisrael. V'chein minhagenu. And that is our minhag. V'nochun hu. Shkadei shelo yehichel chalek v'amidato min atzibur. So he should always be facing, his body should face the same way that the tzibur is facing, and he shouldn't be poresh min atzibur in terms of the way his body is facing. So that's exactly what we have here, right? Here in the shul, we have the problem, right? Which is that the it faces, I don't know which direction, it faces actually.
We face north-northeast.
North, right?
North-northeast.
Right. So the shul wanted to build, was built for wealth, so they faced the northern side, but we really need to face the more eastward because the...
southeast. We're 30 degrees off of
Yerushalayim. So we really need to face. So the question is, how do you rectify that problem? Right? Do you rectify the problem by facing your body in that direction, right, and turning your face a little forward, or you face your body with the tzibur and then face... right, just your face towards Yerushalayim, and that would deal with what the difference between the Rashi and the Ramah over here. Or do you do something in between, which is that you move your body on an angle towards what would be the proper direction versus the facing of the shul. That way you're not right turning away from where the rest of the shul is facing, but you're not also going totally in the other direction. So again, the halachic implications of what you do in these circumstances where you're not facing the right direction of how to solve the problem emanate from this Gemara over here. So... okay, the Gemara continues and quotes the Rabbi Yossi's opinion that we saw earlier in the Gemara, right back on Yudchet. Marchikim et mishma min ayerek. Tan Rabbi Yossi matir bechardal sheyachol omar lo. Acha tomer li archeg chardacha min dvarai. Before you say, take away your mustard from my bees, archeg dvarcha min chardalai. Take your bees away from my mustard. Sheba'ot v'achlot liglugei chardalai. Because they're going to come and eat. Rashi over here says, pirchei chardulai. They're going to come and eat the flowers of my mustard. Tosfos over there brought the Rach and his own opinion that it either referred to the leaves or the branches of the chardal of the mustard. And Rashi over here says, it's brachim is the flowers. Right now, new Mishnah. This is the Mishnah that is so often quoted that we finally get to it. This is the Mishnah that the Gemara is quoted here and in Bava Metzia and so many other places. You have to take a boar, it has to be distanced from a tree, 25. A tree has to be distanced from a boar 25 amot. When it comes to a sycamore or a carob tree, it has to be 50 amot. What does Rashi say? Rashi says, because shorshein mirubim, they have a lot of roots, their roots are extended, and therefore you need to be further away. As opposed to in the previous Mishnah, on Chavdal and Bet, Rashi says, why do you have to distance them away from the city 50 amot? I would have thought also because the roots. Rashi says, no, because the Tiferet has to do with the Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and the Noi. Noi Eretz Yisrael, that they have a lot of branches and leaves, and therefore they're going to block the lighting and take up the whole horizon or people's ability to see out, and therefore you have to distance them further than a regular tree because they have a lot of branches. So they both have a lot of branches and a lot of roots. So that's what the requirement for distancing it 50 amot is.
Most trees spread out on the bottom.
Oh, there's a correlation between them. Okay. So ben milamala, ben minatzad. Doesn't matter if the tree is higher than the boar or on the side of the boar. Im abor kadma, if the boar was there first, kotzei tzunotein damim, you cut the tree down and you pay him for the tree. Im elan kadam, if the tree was there first, logi kotz, then you can't take it down. That was the balabor's problem. Safek zekadam, it's a safek, who was there first, logi kotz, then you can't cut it down. We saw this already in the previous Gemaras. Rabbi Yossi Omer, as Rabbi Yossi argues and says, of a pisha abor kodem elan, if the boar was there first, I can put my tree down, lo yikotz, don't cut it out. It's my property, I can do what I want on my property, right? And it, since I'm not doing damage, immediate damage to you, it's too bad that I'm putting my tree within proximity to your boar, where it's eventually going to cause damage to your boar. Tana, bencha bor lamata, right? V'ilan lamala, bencha bor lamala, v'ilan lamata. So it doesn't matter where the tree is, if it's above, you know, I mean the level of the ground is above that of the boar, or it's below the level of the boar, as opposed to our Mishnah only mentioned, right, lamala and minatzad. So when it says, bishloma bor lamata, v'ilan lamala, makes sense when the boar is on a lower plane and the tree is higher, ka'azlin in shorshim maskele the boar. Then the tree's roots will come right into the side of the boar, the top of the boar, and it'll ruin it. The boar lamala, if the boar is on top, on a higher elevation or higher plane, then the ilan, the mata, abai, what's the problem? The roots will go under the boar. They won't affect the boar at all. So why should that be problematic? We saw this before. Machlidin et hakarka means it'll soften the earth underneath. Umalkin karkiyotosho bor. And it'll, right, collapse the base of the bor, the floor of the bor will collapse inward because the underneath it is being softened up. So there is a problem with having roots underneath the bor. Halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. If I'm in my own property, I can do what I want. When we were in the house of Kana, we qualified the statement of Rabbi Yossi. So even though halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, there's this qualification. Right, that when you do direct damage, right, when you do something that is immediately causes damage to your friend, you can't say, I'm doing it in my own property, too bad. When you can say, I'm doing it in my own property, too bad, is when the damage will only come in the future, or possible damage will come in the future. That is indirect damage. There, Rabbi Yossi says it's fine, like planting a tree in your yard. Maybe eventually the roots will reach there, and if the roots reach there, it'll only be after a certain amount of time. It's not happening immediately. Whereas if the damage is immediate and present, then we will say, you are mazik, and a mazik, you're not allowed to be a mazik in your property. So that, and Rashi over here quotes that when we say the lachas of Rabbi Yossi, he says it's ala nizak lachachikat etzmo, that the obligation is on the nizak to distance himself from here. Elaim kain, the mazik is doing immediate and present damage. If that's the case, then we say to the mazik, don't do damage right away. So, Rabbi Yonah was his name, he was from the place of Yonah. Ani was a poor man, v'hashir, and he got rich. Right, he got rich at a certain time. Ava bana apanda badna. He built himself a mansion. After he got rich, he built himself a beautiful, nice house, a mansion. Abu Hanach atzure b'shivuvute. There were these individuals who were collecting. They used to take in sesame seeds too, or plant sesame seeds, or take in sesame seeds and press them for oil. They lived in his neighborhood. He have a daike shumshe, have a naida apande. But they used to crush, I guess, squeeze the shumshime, the sesame for the oil inside of it. Right? They used to shake the foundations of his house. After the kamei of Asi, he came before Asi. Amalek, he have on beirak van, have aminan moter Rabbi Yossi begiri dile. So then, Rabbi Yossi agrees when it's direct damage or direct hezek that you can remove them or you can demand of them to cease and desist. So over here, he's saying to them, listen, they're causing your house to shake, which is a clear damage or immediate damage to your house because it's shaking the foundation. If that's the case, then even according to Rabbi Yossi, you can stop them and you can issue a cease and desist order. They must stop. Now, even though, truthfully, who was there first? Right? The oil pressers were there first, number one. And number two is, when they came there, they were there behet there. So why can all of a sudden he can show up, build his mansion, and then they can kick him out? So Tosa says, it's interesting, Tosa says, Rabuta Nakat, that if you look up in the last Tosa, there, Rabuta Nakat, it's a Chiddush, Sheyani, he was originally Ani, V'lo Yibayla Suge, that Daiyush Ibnei Afanda, right? That they shouldn't have thought that he was going to build a mansion. Why should they ever consider that he was going to build this huge house? He was a poor man. Despite that fact, even though they didn't need to anticipate such a thing, they have to move it away. Even it was done beheter, ain't sarich l'archik afilu begiri delay. Right? Even though generally when you put it there with heter, we don't demand of you to move it away because you were there first and you did it appropriately, like refet bakar, right? And chanut shel nachtomim and tzvayim. Right, and so why is that? So Omer Retenom Hachlainu Taimim Mishum Tolo Kviya Tashmishayu Kokachi Anachdael. We're talking about something that's done there on a fixed basis and there's a permanent setting. Then we say, if you put it there, behet there, we're not going to make it move it. But something that is somewhat transitory or something that can move and can be done in other places, we're going to insist on them that they move it away so they don't cause damage when it's giving a delay, even though they brought it there, behet there. Now, the last thing we'll stop with this is comma. How much does it have to shake the house to be considered damage to the house? Like the kenayid nichtama apume dechatzva, like the shaking of the cover on the top of a barrel. So Rashi says, well, if you place a barrel on a wall and then place its cover on it, if the pounding on the ground below causes the wall to shake, where the barrel on top will also its cover will shake, that is enough shaking. Right, that ra'ada, that type of shaking of the foundation is sufficient. Whereas Tosus says that he thinks that's way too much. Says you take a bang like that to have to shake on top of the wall, that's too much. And he says it's talking about a case where you're holding the barrel in your hands, right? And if when you're holding the barrel and there's pounding on the ground, that causes the cover of the barrel to shake, That would be enough shaking to consider damage or give a delay when it comes to the destruction of the house. The Ritzbah tries to defend Rashi's position. He says that if you don't put the cover in so tightly on the top of the wall, then when you shake on the bottom, a little shaking of the wall will also shake the cover. And that's what Rashi meant. Rashi didn't mean a sealed tightly barrel where it'll take a lot of force to open it up, but rather something that was loosely fitted on top and that would shake when any type of hitting or damage was done over there.